All right, Mark, you're in Chicago. The draft has come and gone. We've had some practices, some what they call them, OTAs or whatever. How's everybody feeling about Caleb, Rome, and the Bears going into the season? What's it like in town?
Everybody's pretty excited. I think like I was at Soldier Field last night for a concert, and I was talking to one of my buddies, and I was like, "Yeah, I think I'll actually probably like pay for tickets and like go to a few games this year." It looks like a team that'll be like exciting to watch, and that is putting together a roster that's like trying to win and score some points. So the excitement around here with all my friends and everybody, like they're pretty pumped about the offensive weapons that they've had, and it looks like Caleb is who we hope he is. And everything that's been talked about has been kind of spot on with him. But no, it's a pretty exciting time to be a Bears fan.
Well, as you know, Bears fans are very patient people, and will definitely let Caleb take his time. Not at all. Not at
No.
all. He's got to win pretty early, man. I don't think that we lose game one, they're going to lose their mind. I mean, it's kind of how the Bears fans are. But yeah, you got to respect it. It's all good.
I think he'll have some success. There's enough guys around him that they'll set him up for success where, give him a simple offense that he can thrive in from the start. And then, as he gets comfortable, then you can kind of start to push the limits of it and see what he can actually do. But at least he has some weapons that he can throw to and he can work with.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for a preseason game. I just want to see them in the uniforms running around out there. It's going to be here before we know it too. So it's of course saying that, nice little segue here, Scott. Our segue game is getting stronger, but let's talk about our preseasons. Those are coming up. I guess Brian, you'll probably be the earliest to see your boys. I mean, they got to come in and do their thing. So we have some different outlooks here. We have a traditional Division I situation with Mark, the at Army, a different type of Division I situation, and I'm a Division III guy, so I've got a later start and different look to it. So basically, before, like, no, like Brian, your guys aren't in yet, are they?
Our freshmen arrived yesterday and
Yeah.
they
Okay.
are in processing as we speak. So,
Okay.
we're getting some haircuts and some uniforms and getting started on their West Point journey, literally as we're talking.
Wow, that's
Okay.
exciting.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so until today though, you guys have probably interacted with your boys and maybe sent them some messages or whatever. So my first question is, what is your message to your team going into preseason? And I kind of have a little caveat there. Is it different for returners than it is for freshmen and maybe even inside the returners, a guy that didn't play versus did play? So Mark, if you don't mind, kick us off. What are you telling your boys right now coming into the season?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start reaching out to them in the next like week or so, just kind of reminding them like, hey, you're a week out from preseason. This is going pretty quickly. We're also in a different situation because we're on the quarter system. So our guys finished finals on like June 16th. So I saw them like 2 weeks ago. So they we were able to train like throughout the month of May and kind of slowed down once Memorial Day hit. But as far as like once we left campus, the message to them was number one, come back fit. Number two, come back healthy. And then three, come back like happy and excited and feel like you got the most out of your summer. So that preseason, you're something that you're super excited for, that you're feeling fresh, you're feeling ready for. I told them like I didn't want them to kind of overdo it over the summer because we have a long school year. And like I said, they just left campus on June 16th. So I wanted them to have some downtime for themselves. But then once we got to about a month out before preseason, then it's just the right thing to start to get after it with the workouts and make sure that they come back fit so that we can have a healthy preseason and a great start to the school year.
Brian, is your messaging pretty similar to that?
Yes and no. So we our guys go our academic year ended May 20, and our guys went into their military training pretty much May 21st, so straight in. But then they were out for June 7th or June 8th. And so they got a good amount of time to kind of go back and be in their home environments. And we set up a number of them with USL 2 teams, and you know, just got them on the field with maybe their U19 team at their club. If, you know, obviously our scheduling is a little bit more sporadic, so it's hard to fully commit to those USL2 teams for some of our guys. But we just had two of our guys down training with the Charleston Battery. You know, a few other guys looking at some opportunities before they come back. So, you know, for us, a little bit different just because our runway is a little bit longer. And then one of the big differences, you know, our guys are allowed, you know, a certain amount of leave time, and then they have to kind of come back. So July 15th, all of our players have to come back to West Point. So it kind of is where many schools do the captain's practices in a volunteer way. Ours is just regulated by kind of the government. And so with that, you know, we get together with our strength coach on July 15th and get a good, you know, 3-week runway until we begin official practices on August 6th.
Yeah, that has to be massive for you and those guys to be able to have structured fitness type situations before they check in. I mean, you know, for us at Division III level, my guys check in and then we practice the next day. And that's kind of why I asked about the freshmen specifically. They're still skin and bones kids, 18-year-olds. And you're like, man, have you even been eating? You know, some of these guys are so skinny and they just haven't had the college cafeteria, they haven't been working out, they haven't been around the men that they're about to be around. And so Mark, specifically to freshmen, what are you telling them? I mean, they've got to be kind of a deer in headlights with this. They know they need to be fit, but most, there's really no way to tell exactly what you're about to get yourself into until you get in there. So what's your messaging to specifically to your incoming class?
Yeah, I did a Zoom with them last week just to kind of go over the expectations for preseason and go through kind of what we talked with to get the returners about right before they left. And the message to them is just like, look, you guys have a little bit over a month to get yourself prepared physically, mentally, and emotionally for the most soccer that you've ever played in your life and the most difficult soccer that you've ever played in your life. And I just talked to them. We had a really successful spring season and the guys were really excited about our opportunities in the fall. And so I told the freshman, like, it's on you guys to come in and set a great first impression. That's going to be the biggest thing for you guys. And I said, fortunately or unfortunately, it's a fitness test. So that is going to be your first impression to the team, showing what kind of work you were willing to do in the off season, doing the hard stuff. It's easy to go play soccer. It's easy to jump in 11 and be 11 game. But making sure that you're hitting the fitness standard as a freshman shows the rest of the team that, like, hey, I'm here to help you guys. I'm here to win. And I just kept hitting on your first impression means pretty much everything. And you want to make sure that it's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's perfect. So besides fitness, though, what are other ways that a first impression can fail or really step a kid up? I mean, a kid's going to come in and you're not assuming he's going to be this guy. I mean, specifically freshman. Like, you can't just assume he's going to come in and be this guy that's going to, oh, his game will translate perfectly to college day one. I mean, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, what other, besides fitness, what other stands out? What else stands out to you guys, specifically the younger crop that are coming in, first timers with you? What stands out?
I think they're like surprised at the speed of everything that first couple training sessions, and you'll see like a deer in headlights in a few of them. A couple of them are like, oh, this is what I've been doing, this is fine. But a few of them will just kind of be looking around like, what did I get myself into? And so it's just continuing to remind them, like, look, you guys are great soccer players, you belong here. Just give yourself a little bit of time to adjust to the speed. And just, I told them, just have some grace with yourselves. You guys are going to be extremely hard on yourselves in the first couple of days. It's going to take a minute to figure out the speed and really find your feet with this. And we're not going to be here expecting the world of you on day one. We just want you to come in and make sure that, like, you're working hard, doing all the right things, and showing that you're ready to be a great teammate. And the soccer stuff will all start to fall in.
Brian, you think you're pretty similar there?
Yes and no. I think the structural difference between, you know, a normal college and then, you know, West Point creates a little bit of a different dynamic, right? Where they've just come from four weeks and change of, you know, reforming really the way that they are conducting themselves, communicating and all of that. And then in a way, when they come into our team room, they are one of 29, right? They're not, you know, a freshman, a sophomore, a junior, a senior. They're one of 29. And so in a way, deprogramming them a little bit from what they've just been kind of instructed for the last 4 weeks, which happens pretty easily because soccer is so natural for all of them, right? And so, you know, we in our preseason will integrate the new guys by having them be the ones speak when we do group exercises, right? Yeah. And so just get them comfortable communicating, talking in front of the group, and you know, just making everybody kind of feel as if they're one group pulling in the same direction. And so ours is a little bit less, you know, in the way like Marky was describing on the field, and a little bit more just making sure that we're able to make them feel a part of it as quickly as we can.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you're getting them comfortable, but you're doing it by making them uncomfortable, and they have mm-hmm. to fight through that. That's always good stuff. Now moving into the other guys, Mark, you made a good point about how we're not expecting the world out of freshmen right away. And, you know, we're in the same boat, but your expectations are a little different for your returners. And so specifically to them, what could put a kid in a bad situation in your eyes during preseason? I mean, it could be a returning starter. It could be a kid that, you know, maybe didn't play much, that's trying to prove himself. I mean, what are some things besides not being fit, which is such a dagger for a kid to come in not being fit, especially a returner? You're like, what are you doing? But what other things could stand out in your mind that could hurt a kid coming in as a returner?
Yeah, I mean, I think like your approach to training or complacency is generally kind of like your worst enemy in that, where you started and played a bunch of games last year and you're just expecting that to be the case this year, when in fact it's a brand new team, right? There's a bunch of new guys on the team. This is the direction that we're going. And if you didn't put in the extra work in the off season and somebody that you're competing with did, and they're showing up to training and giving it 100% every single day, and you're kind of like, well, I started last year, so I'll probably start again this year, it's fine, right? The approach to everything means everything. So the guys who are showing up early with energy, that are like, you know, chatting with other guys, starting to knock the ball around before practice, that are adding something to training, those are typically the guys that like you want to get out onto the field. And if you're a guy that's showing up kind of like walking out 2 minutes before practice, shoes untied, like not necessarily ready to go from the start, then you're just showing like, hey, this isn't exactly like the most important thing to you. Like you can't just show up and get it going. Like this, there's got to be a professional mindset to all of this. So the guys that really stand out are the ones that show up early and then give that professional approach and compete 100% every single day.
Yeah, that the assuming part is what could absolutely kill you. I mean, if you're a returner and you're assuming you know the coach's thoughts, or you're assuming you know your position on the field, or like in your case, like you just talked about, you're assuming that what I did months ago in this last season, which, you know, it's 9-10 months ago from the start of last year, like that's just going to carry over. I mean, you're making a critical error, and that's definitely something that puts a dagger in you. I'll call out one of my guys. Maybe you've had guys do this as well. He showed up. I won't give him the year, so I won't call him out too bad, but he showed up and I'm like, huh, I know a dad bod when I see one. Cause I definitely have one myself. And, how did that happen to you as a 19-year-old? What? I don't understand. And I asked him after like 4 or 5 days of him absolutely struggling, as you can imagine. He just goes, yeah, I thought I could get fit while I was here. I'm like, man, you killed your season. I mean, and you know, he was a defender, so we don't sub a ton back there. And when you're seventh or eighth in the back, that's a hard ladder to climb. And yeah, you had a lot of good stuff there. Is your Brian, are your returners usually pretty well dialed in? I mean, you know, they've gone through the Army situation there for a couple of years, some of them, and I would imagine that they've got a different mindset than some of the returners that are not at a military school.
You'd be surprised, you know. you know, the home is home to everybody, right? And so some of the natural, you know, pulls and tendencies, and you know, it's where we talk all the time about habits and discipline, right? And two things that they instill here anyway. But you know, I think the thing for us, you know, and the thing I left them all with was, you know, the spring ended well, but the fall didn't. And, you know, with that, you know, you all were a part of it in the fall and it wasn't good enough. And we're bringing in 12 players now that want to make it better. And so it's now kind of in your hands, the level of effort you input to your summer to try to change the way the fall went and make it better for the one coming. Because I know the 12 guys coming in are very set on that, right? They see an opportunity, right? They don't see a Patriot League championship team like the team before did, right? This one saw a team that performed below the standard, and now they see a chance where they can come in and make it better right away. So, we kind of foster that competitiveness, and, we do it. Our one rule in the entire program is just you have to be a great teammate, right? And you do that in any one of 100 ways. But I think the best way to do it is by showing up, trying to make the team better. And so with that, if you're finding yourself as a new guy, and I can say this because they can't listen to it right now. They're unplugged for the next 4 weeks. But come on in and beat the guy out that had the spot you want. Not in like a threatening way, but in my last two seasons, a freshman's come out and beat a senior captain for a starting position. And so they know that here that's the culture that we have, and there is no entitlement to anything. Everything's earned, and those on the field are going to be the ones that are going to help us win games and perform the best.
Yeah, and your attitude's everything. You guys have really harped on that a bunch. And it's not something you could just turn on. You can't show up and be like, all right, I'm done eating like crap. I haven't worked out. I'll start now. You can't do that. And coming in with the right attitude is critical for fitness. Coming with the right attitude with, well, whatever these two coaches are doing with me, I'm ready for it. And like at the end of the day, we're trying stuff. It's preseason. We got 12 new guys and we lost 12 guys. That's a 24-man turnaround. We have no idea who we are. Mark, you said it. We're a brand new team and we have an idea. We have a plan. But until we start to see it going, we don't know for sure exactly the route we're going to go. And so being able to work with us in that situation is also critical. I mean, if I throw something at a kid and it wasn't what he was expecting and he doesn't handle it well, that hurts. It's like, just, hey, do your best every single day. Come in with that attitude leading up to it, which takes a month or two of your own preseason work to come in ready to go and having the right mindset. And I'm hoping that a lot of young players listen to this and hear, three different coaches saying all the same stuff. And so we could have some much cleaner preseasons, hopefully moving forward. Well, I think the question that you posed with me a little bit earlier, you said specifically kind of which ones to choose. And I think they would all agree that's a loaded question that, if you're a freshman versus if you're a rising senior, there's a lot of factors involved there. And it's if you have a freshman, what are your guys' thoughts there specifically? I mean, do you think going to ID camps is a good idea specifically for a freshman or even a sophomore? And if so, why? I mean, what do you get out of that? We have freshmen at all ID camps have freshmen. So what's happening for those young men? I mean, what are they getting out of it? How can they make mistakes in this process? Cause I don't think any of us are recruiting freshmen right now. So, it's why are they there? Why is it still productive for them? And, Mark, I mean, what are your thoughts with that?
Freshmen, I look at it like they have nothing to lose, right? Like they're getting an experience of being around college coaches, being around a college campus, and they're just kind of putting it kind of in their file of like their college process, basically. We had an ID camp on Friday and we had four freshmen there. A couple of them did well. A couple of them like aren't quite there yet, but like they're all 5'4". They haven't physically changed yet. And so there, it's like, you look at their mentality, if they're like not, if they're not backing down, if they're still playing with confidence, trying to do what, you know, they typically do with their own environment. I think it's awesome to see the freshmen that come in and that aren't scared or that are trying to like throw as much weight as they can around it. Some of the older kids that are there. So that part is fun. And my interaction with those kids is always just like super positive and like helpful with them because they're so early in the process. Like, yeah, theoretically they have no business being there because they're not going to be recruited for a couple of years. But I think any experience changes you and you can use it for the positive. And so for those freshmen, it's like, cool. I was on a college campus, played on a college soccer field, college coaches, you know, worked with me and I got to learn a little bit of what their expectations are and what some of the training sessions are. So now when I step out onto the field, you know, should be more confident because now I've learned what the next level is and I have something that I'm working towards. So I just use it, try to help teach them like, hey, this is an educational process for you guys. There is no business side of the things. You're just here to learn, here to experience, and here to grow.
Yeah, that's the exact message that I tell, you know, the young kids and their families. It's sure, pick one, go to an ID camp. Don't go to 10. That's going to be expensive. And you're not going to get recruited from any of them probably. So pick one. You're going to see exactly kind of these are the guys that Coach Plotkin is recruiting. You'll see. I mean, I've been to ID camps where they've got kids on official visits, and it doesn't take long for the kids in the crowd of the ID campers to notice that, oh, he's here on an official visit. That's exactly who this team is recruiting. And it's a great educational experience. Like, that's what I need to get to. That's the level I need to be at. I've got 2 or 3 years to get there. And it's a great educational experience. And I think the mistake they make is if you go to a bunch of ID camps over a summer as a freshman and expect to start your process that day, I just think you're going to make a big mistake there. Brian, is yours a little different? I mean, are there specific military ID camps that there aren't any of those? I think we talked about this on the last podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. Ours is, I mean, we did the same actually. Like, oddly enough, we had camp Friday, Saturday, you know, and we have a few coaches come in from, you know, some other schools at the Division III level that, you know, will look that have military connections, right? You know, so where it can be fruitful for them. And, you know, it's funny, a parent asked the same question actually, you know, and it was a freshman parent. And I just said, if I'm you, I'm going to 4 ID camps this summer. I said, I'm going to your son's dream school. I'm going to the opposite of your son's dream school. And then I'm going to a school out of region, and then I'm going to a different type of school than the first two, if that makes sense. And I said, go use the first year as an opportunity to see what your son's interest is in different campus, right? If you come to Army, you're going to see one thing. If you go to, you know, Stevens Institute of Technology, you're going to see another, right? And so go see what the differences are, right? You think you've seen, you know them, you've heard of them, but go live in it, you know, and see the differences and work with the coaches, see the standard of player, sure. You know, and then sophomore year, you know, now you engage your club coach before and you're like, hey, these are the schools that I'm interested in attending camps. What do you think? You hope your club coach is honest in your level and giving you a good assessment of that. And then you go to those. And your junior year, then it becomes the ones that are recruiting you, you know, and then in your senior year, it might be the school you're committed to or your final couple choices, right? And I think, you know, in that way, then it's very specific to you and you use it as a progressive process, not just, you know, kind of a shot in the dark and hope, right? And go from there. Because I think, you know, the biggest thing, and I loved it too. We had, I think, 3 freshmen at our camp, and 2 of them knew what a military academy was. And the other was like, no, I got an email and it looked cool, right? And you're like, exactly, like, come find out, right? And that's what that first year really should be, and go from there. And so, you know, our take on it kind of revolves in there. And then, yeah, I think, you know, you get to see the coaching, what they're like, and have that experience of the players. And so, but yeah, I think ID camps in a way like have a weird reputation right now where everyone's like, oh, they're just money makers. But I think there is plenty of opportunity for the consumer to use it as research and information, especially early in the process.
You made a good point there. And actually the 2 young men that you sent us for the podcast a few months ago, I think one of them was like, man, I want to go to West Point. He knew from an early age. And the other one was, oh, they just reached out. I didn't even think that that was a possibility. And all of a sudden you hear dad in the background, like, this is a great opportunity, kiddo, you know? And so yeah. you're right. I mean, to your point at your place, which is so specific, you don't know. You don't know until you're there. You don't know until you interact with you and the players there. Do you have any of your guys work in your camps as well?
So they're not allowed to. You know, it's like one negative. Every time I'm like, man, it'd be really helpful to have our guys jump into this, or, you know, like they had done at other schools. But I do want to make one point to what you just mentioned. So Jackson and Jabril were on the call, right? We were really excited about Jabril, but we actually were like, Jabril, you have to come to camp because we have to see how you respond to coaching. We want, you know, Jabril is a dynamic, incredibly talented, fast winger. But we had to make sure Jabril was coachable, that he could defend. And so we were very adamant about Jabril, like, hey, come to camp. We want to work with you. And we're going to, you know, and we did. On that day, we coached him like a player, like we do most of the guys at our camp, right? We get into him, we show him the expectation. And Jabril showed us on that day that he's capable of taking the coaching and doing the work defensively. And I think it was maybe a week later, you know, we offered him the spot. So it's another way that the camps can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. And if I'm a freshman, I'm going to notice that. But now, moving into the older guys, you just talked about Jabril, a guy that you encouraged to get there. And so you knew you're going to watch him. Yeah. There was no, he needed to shake my hand or anything so I can see what number he's wearing, all that stuff. There's none of that. So for both of you, you go to these camps, some of them are like 500 kids deep. I mean, even at 100, it's hard to really see them all and get a good assessment just in one day. So how does a kid separate himself? How does a kid, besides obviously playing really well in front of you specifically, you don't want to be playing well in the other field, but besides playing really well right in front of your eyes, making a move that you just really like, how can a kid separate themselves? How can a kid just get to the point where he's like, okay, I now know that Coach Blocking he's going to watch me. You know, Mark, what's something I need to make sure I watch number 30 today. And I don't know him yet. He's a kid I haven't seen. I haven't identified him yet, but he stands out because of these couple of factors. You got anything there?
Yeah, I think they're the guys that fit like your off the field culture things, right? Of like the guys that maybe showed up early, that were like properly getting themselves warmed up, that were interacting with other campers, like not just kind of off on their own, just kind of like, I don't know, either too shy or acting like they were too cool to go make a new friend and go talk to somebody. The ones that when you are making a coaching point are looking you in the eye. And then also the ones that are then implementing that coaching point afterwards. So they show like, one, they're going to pay attention to you, they respect you, and two, they're coachable and they're going to try whatever you were saying. Those are the kids that like that will really stand out for us at a camp. I mean, along with just how are you interacting with the athletic training staff? How are you interacting with the other coaches? How are you interacting with the other campers? Because the human being for us is more important than the soccer player. There's so many great soccer players out there. But you want to make sure that you get the person right first, because that's who you interact with every single day. And we only interact with you as a soccer player for an hour and a half, 2 hours a day. And you're interacting with them as a human being way more than that. And you want to make sure that, you know, they're the right people that are coming into your program. And so when we use those ID camps, as much as I identify like, okay, what are their soccer attributes like? Typically, if we invite a kid to come to camp, it's like we already kind of know what he's like as a soccer player. Now you're trying to poke the intangibles, the human being aspect of things. You know, did they show up early? You know, did they show up like looking like they were ready to go, or did they roll out of bed and walk out there? Right? Did they show up like they had something to prove, or did they show up acting like, I'm already like, you know, they really like me, I'm already probably going to come here. And so that attitude, those expectations are something that you don't necessarily get to see all the time because you're watching them play, versus when you actually get to coach them, kind of how Brian was talking about, like, how do they interact to your coaching? You know, do they respond to it, or do they just kind of blow it off? Are they looking you in the eye when you're making a coaching point, and then they're trying to implement it? Like, those are really big things for us. I think the other thing too is like for the kids, also use it as a trial for us as coaches, right? Like if a kid comes in and, you know, Jabril goes to that camp and he sees what Brian and his coaching staff are harping on, and they're coaching him to defend, they're pushing him, they're challenging him, and that's not something that, you know, he's really that into, then great, now he knows, right? And it's a great trial for the campers. As much as it is for us, it's about them choosing, like, this is a coaching staff that I feel I can interact with, this is a coaching staff, you know, that are preaching things that I can really get behind. I feel like they're going to push me, but in the right way. Or if you don't want to be challenged and you don't want to be pushed that way, then you know how those coaches are, and you know that's a program that you probably shouldn't be going to.
Yeah, that's such an important point. There's too many kids that have come into all of our offices, I'm sure, that are like, well, this is a Division I school, or in our case, this is a good Division III, so this is fine. And they only did their research on, well, how did they do in their season? And they didn't do their research on the other factors. And you just made a great point. We only get a few hours with you a day. The rest of your day is you in your dorms, you at the academic situation, you in the cafeteria. There's a lot of factors involved that a lot of kids aren't looking at. And to ID camp specific situation here, that's a perfect example. I mean, when we're training our guys at the ID camp, we're running them through drills that we're going to do with our guys at season. I mean, we're seeing how you do and the stuff that we're going to do in preseason. And, you know, so being reactive there, making sure you're answering the right questions and trying to put into play what we're trying to coach here is critical. Even if you're failing at it a little bit, you're doing exactly what I'm asking you to do. You're going to eventually get it. And that's such a critical point there. And I appreciate you talking about specifically, hey, you're also testing us. You know, you need to see if you can put up with me for 4 years. I don't want you in the portal. You know, if I bring you in, I want you here. And now, Brian, do you have anything different, anything specific for you in the military schools?
No, not really. I mean, I think, you know, with it, my only thing is like, show your personality, like be yourself. Don't be who you think we want you to be, you know, because I think, you know, the more you just, you know, and that can be as, you know, off the field, how you are and on the field too, you know, don't think like we all of a sudden one amazing play is going to change something. It's like, no, just have a consistent day of your highest level performance and what you do best. And then off the field, be who you are. You know, I think the one unique thing to our camp that I think is unique to others, like our warm-up, I take the technical warm-up with the whole camp. And I challenge them that by the end of the day, I'm going to ask them to tell me 5 people that they met today. And so through the warm-up, I like move the groups around and I make them go up and introduce themselves to everyone in their group. So, you know, you're in groups of 6 for a technical sequence or something. They go up and they meet 6 new guys. And then halfway through, I switch half the group, 3 and 3. They go up, they meet 3 new guys, right? So by the end of the morning, you probably met 36 to 42 people with the way we rotate through it. So, you know, it's something I say, like you're in an environment where you're alone. But the best way now to feel comfortable oftentimes is by knowing people's names and feeling comfortable talking to them. And so a little side skill, like having the ability to go up and introduce yourself to someone and then refer to someone new by name is a pretty beneficial skill for the rest of your life. And so we just incorporate it to the first 30 minutes of our camp.
And that's got to be critical for you, especially since you got kids all over the country coming in. And, you know, for us, we're a Virginia State school and everybody that's at my camp's going to be a Virginia-based school. Most of these kids either knew each other or played against each other. They're wearing a badge like, oh yeah, I played against you 2 weeks ago. And so there's a familiarity there that's kind of natural. And for you, that's huge. It's like, hey, I met a kid from Maine today and I live in Arizona. And that's great. And it's interesting. Both you did the same thing that I do. You talked about the off the field stuff. You talked about the things that matter the most outside of the soccer, because you know, I think Mark, you made the point about we're going to know pretty quickly if you could play for us or not. It's the other stuff that's really the big deal. But sticking to now on the field, what separates a kid in your eyes? What's your advice to a kid who's at a camp and maybe he has some gifts and you want to see him? So Mark, specifically, I mean, what do you look for in these kids that you don't know yet? You haven't recruited them and they've got something to show you. What do you want to see?
I mean, it goes back to kind of what Brian was talking about. It's like, be who you are. Like if you're a center midfielder that, you know, is very good in possession, just every single activity, be the best player in possession. And just really embrace your top skill set. Like if you're a center midfielder, like don't necessarily go throw yourself up front to try to show that you're a goal scorer, right? Like, yeah, people notice goals, but if we're coaches, we kind of have a trained eye so we can see different things. So whatever you do great and whatever you excel at, just make sure that those things come out. It's the same message that we say to our guys all the time. Like if you're a winger that has a ton of pace and 1v1 ability, then show that. Like make sure that comes out in a game. Don't just be a bumper out on the wing that just passes the ball backwards and sideways. like take your moments to go run at people and show that you have pace, you have the ability to be dynamic and create in the final third. So whatever your positionally you feel is your best spot, just make sure that you keep reinforcing kind of those attributes and making sure that they come out in you.
Yeah, it's such a critical point. I mean, even if it's not just specific to what you're doing in the activities, I mean, if you can kick the ball 80 yards, show it. I mean, you might turn it over, but I'm going to say, whoa, you know, that thing took off. Or if you have a long throw, or, you know, goalkeepers specifically, I mean, you don't want them turning it over or just punting it every time. But if you could kick the ball into the other box, I'd love to see you do that. Just even if it's just one time, and that's a little factor. I'm like, okay, that's a wow thing. Let me focus on you a little bit more. And Brian, I'm assuming you have the same message there. Is there anything specific that you look for out of a player that you don't know yet that's, you know, trying to show off and trying to make the team?
I guess the one thing to add, I mean, Mark did a good job talking about most of it, is honestly your reactions when something doesn't go well, right? You turn the ball over, you take a bad touch, just react in a good way. You know, don't throw your arms up like it was something like world ending, you know, or that, you know, you're shocked it happened, right? Just get on to the next play and go try to win the ball back. If it's a turnover, if it's a missed pass for a throw in, organize your team, get it going. But, you know, I think just the immediate reactions being a positive one to mistakes is something that we often look for.
Yeah. No,
one thing that I would say, like, does, we just had the camp, so like kind of going off of that a little bit, any kid that sprints around defensively and is willing to defend, like, those kids stand out. Every kid thinks that they're all going to play for Man City and possession is king and this is what we all have to do, and we're all going to build out of the back and we're all really good in possession. Like, any kid that is willing to, that shows like, I can possess and do everything, but yeah, as soon as I lose the ball, I'm going to sprint after it. Or if my team doesn't have the ball, like, I care about defending. Those are kids that stand out, because there's too much transition in college soccer where you can't just be a one-sided player. Like, you have to play both sides of the ball. Especially, I know that Brian values that in his program. That's like the basis of my program. Any kid on our team has to be willing to defend, because that's who you are as a person, because nobody notices defending, but your teammates do. And so for me, that's character. That's who you are. It's easy to do the stuff on the ball, but if you're willing to show that you'll sprint around and go defend and do the hard things, like, that's something that stands out for me at a camp.
Yeah, I mean, that makes you a complete pain in the butt. And I know that I don't want to play against that. And so I'm gonna see if this is something that I could add to my program for sure. I mean, it's such a critical point.
Yeah, I think a little bit unfair for Marky to go second, because it's like the premise of this whole place, right? But you know, but within it, I think it's, you know, what I love about what our guys get both in and out of our program is they're just surrounded by quality people that care about them. And so oftentimes when you're seeking guidance or advice, it's the questions you ask and who you ask them to. And I think West Point as a whole is full of people that'll answer those questions in a great developmental way, right? And so, you know, our guys, you know, I share a brief story to kind of describe it, but, you know, one of our guys came down at one point, and I think I may have told the story the last time we talked, Scott and Justin, but, you know, he came down and, you know, his best friend was also his cousin, and he was getting married, you know, the day before one of our games in the fall, right? And, you know, it's less about the outcome, but more about the willingness to ask, right? And then you can lead, you know, kind of provide them with some some context and, you know, build a kind of an information map for them that then they can make the best decision for themselves. Right. And through all of that, I think like, that's what we love to do, right? That's how you develop, you know, great teammates. And then hopefully those great teammates become great friends. And after that, they become, you know, great partners to their spouses. And after that, they become great fathers to their children and then great grandfathers to their grandchildren. Right. And I think, you know, that's the ethos of it all. You know, I know we talk often throughout college about it being a 4-year experience where, you know, it's going to shape who you become and the people you're around for the next 40 years, you know, but I also think it's going to shape the people that you haven't yet come across in the next 40 years. And I think that's like one of the biggest joys of it. And so, you know, here with it being very much based in like character and leadership development, you know, I feel when I meet our alums and you look at it and you're like, wow, this is what our current team is going to look like in the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You know, it just gives you a lot of belief in the process that happens here. Because in the end, like Mark's the head coach at DePaul right now. I'm the head coach at Army West Point, but those are just temporary seats, right? They can be filled by anyone at any other time. So the way that you are and the way you develop and treat people, that's going to be your legacy throughout it all, right? And the people then, you know, in 30 years when Mark's sitting at a DePaul alumni event, maybe still as the coach, but not just as a former coach or alum, who knows, you know, he's going to sit there and look at some of the guys he's developed and the people they've become and feel a lot of pride in that, you know? And I think, you know, that's oftentimes the unspoken reason about why many of us have gotten into this, right? Is to just, you know, someone in our life helped shape us to become the people we become. And it influenced us and lit a fire in us to go do the same for others. And so I think, you know, that's really the genesis of it all and kind of the roadmap for the way we try and do it up here.
No, good. Like it's funny because like you're growing up with him, like I've always been the little brother. So it's just like whenever he speaks, like you listen because he's probably got something pretty good to say. And so like even just like sitting here, it's just like, oh, cool. Like I can take that. Like I like that. Right. It's always awesome learning from other coaches, and especially it's surrounding yourself with people that are going to push you in the right direction, that are going to challenge you and like make sure that they get the most out of you. Right. So we talked like during the camp stuff about, you know, the who you are as a player, who you are as a person. And we realized like our role essentially, and like one, it's a big responsibility from us because we're essentially picking these guys hopeful best friends for the next 50 years. Right. Like I have a picture sitting on my desk of me at my wedding. And I'm surrounded by my brother, two of my best club friends, and then every single other guy in the picture are DePaul soccer players. Yep. And so essentially like that, we have a major responsibility of who comes into this program, because these are the guys that can be their friends for life. And it's a really special responsibility that I think coaches shouldn't take lightly. Right? Like as much as we're trying to win soccer games, like we're trying to help shape these guys as people and make sure that, you know, we do right by the guys that we're bringing into this program by surrounding them by the right people that are going to challenge them and maybe and help fill their gaps, right? Like if I have a more, you know, soccer driven kid who wants to be a pro and that's all he ever thinks about, and after practice he's staying after for an hour, he's showing up early for half an hour, he's watching soccer all the time, and maybe like soccer is one and academics are two, and you match him up with a kid whose academics are one and soccer are two, you know, you hope that their habits can then go together, where the soccer kid is now getting his roommate, the academic kid, to stay after for a little bit. Then the academic kid, when he's like, hey, I'm going to go to the library, maybe the kid will put the Fortnite controller down and he'll go over to the library with him. Right. So it's a lot about, you know, human dynamic and how we kind of, you know, work with these kids. But one specific thing I think that was pretty cool is we were fortunate to have a company come in and offer up like a personality assessment. And so our entire team took it and it was given to the coaching staff. And so we kind of got to walk through it and learn about their different personalities and kind of where they fit on a map. And then they were willing to also come in and talk to our team about it and, you know, how each person receives different communication. And so, you know, this is this type of personality. This is, you know, these are some of their tendencies. You know, however you've been interacting with this person, if you've been kind of butting heads, maybe this is why. And maybe this is how they really receive communication and information better. And so we did a couple different exercises with that for our guys. And at the end, like, communication is everything. You know, you're, that's how you're going to leave your interactions with people. You're either going to have a positive experience with a person or a negative experience. And if you understand how to influence people and meet them where they're at, I think you're going to have the greatest outcome on that. And that was one little tool that we kind of took away that has been great for us, because it allows us to understand kind of some of the quieter kids on our team and why they are the way they are, and maybe how we can get the most out of them. But to be honest, we brought in our five leaders. We have a leadership group on our team, and we showed them the map so that they could then better understand how to interact with some of the guys on the team, because they expressed frustration like, well, he doesn't do this, and I don't get why he's not doing this in the weight room. It's, well, he's wired a little bit differently than you. So if you want to get the most out of him, like, screaming at him isn't going to do it. Challenging him, you know, openly in front of a group isn't going to do it. But if you kind of grab him and kind of talk to him on the side where nobody else can hear, and you say like, hey, this is, you know, what I'm seeing, you're going to get the most out of him. And so it's helping these guys, you know, learn how to be leaders, how to interact positively with other people, because those are skills that translate for the rest of their life, not just for these 4 years that we're here.
Yeah, that's all huge stuff. I mean, you know, these guys over their 4 years, the ups and downs of your college career, in and out of the classroom, on and off the field, in and out of the locker room, interacting with these players, being disappointed by a coach or not, or, you know, the ups and downs there, all of that leads into this growth mindset you're talking about, Scott. And, you know, Mark, you made a great point there. When kids ask, I'm sure all of us get the same question, you know, what's your team culture like? And I always giggle at the question, but it's such an important question. I get why the kids are asking it, but no coach is just going to say, you know, well, our culture is terrible. You know, I need good people to come in here and fix it. We're all going to say it's good. But we like to talk about what you just discussed, Mark, with your wedding. I mean, I've got a wedding coming up at the end of the month here. I just went to one a couple months ago during our spring season. And during the wedding, one of our alums is getting married to a woman's alum. And so collectively between the two programs, we had like 30 alumni and coaches there. And the kid officiating the alum was one of my alums. And the best man gave a great speech, and he was an alum, and two other kids standing next to him were alums. And it's just a cool thing. And none of them were All-American superstars. One of them was sitting in the crowd, but the kid that gave the best man speech was a backup player his entire career. And the kid that officiating was in and out of the starting lineup for 4 years. And you could say he may have even been disappointed at times, but it was such a cool thing to see them. And they're all best friends now. And I'm sure that they shared pictures and stories and all kinds of stuff. And the thing that really separates, you know, those types of environments is when you kind of hone in on those conversations, and almost none of them have to do with soccer. And if you hear them talking as 30-year-olds and, you know, older, they're almost never talking about the soccer. They're always talking about, you know, their current situation or fun things that happened while they were in school, you know, in the dorms or in the locker room or on a bus trip. And that's, you know, the growth mindset is going to happen for 4 years. It's fun to watch. It's interesting to hear these guys later. And even the ones that were disappointed still come up, give you a big hug. And you don't even notice. You don't even notice it. And there's true love there, and it's fun. And I think that those are always the best programs. And I think that all coaches, I'm not trying to give advice to my opponents here, but that's how you can really sell the culture of your program, is talk about what it's going to look like when you're all done. And I think you made some great points there, Martin. Well, that's what we talked about with the ID camps. You were testing the coaches as well if you're doing an ID camp correctly. But when you go on an official visit, I know for us, I get out of the way. I've already kind of vetted the kid and had him in my office and chat with the parents. And official visits, you send them off with your guys. And, you know, they're testing the guys. And I always ask my guys, hey, how did it go with Johnny? And, you know, like, did you like him? Is he going to fit in our program as well? So it's a test all around. But if you don't treat it like a test for yourself, then, you know, you're asking, you're asking to be disappointed, you know, by your second year, you're like, this is not what I was expecting. And you could find that out on your recruiting trip. It's a full test. You are about to spend 4 years and a lot of money in a lot of cases here. And you better like it. You better enjoy it. And so I hope that when you go on your official visits, you are testing the process and really questioning, can I see myself here for 4 years and spending this kind of money? And, Brian, is it any different for you? I mean, these kids, they're not paying, but you know, on their official visits, what are they like at the military school? Are you doing anything different? You know, what do they look like?
So typically two nights. The first night, so we'll fly them in, try and get them in the afternoon so they can see training. And then we basically, after training, we put them with the guys. I think everyone rightfully maybe has this idea that all of our guys are robotic, stiff, don't laugh, you know. But then that's the entire, like, that's my favorite thing about the official visit, is because it's almost the most predictable 12 hours when they go with the guys. Because the first thing they say when they come back is like, wow, they're just like, you know, another schooler. They're just like, you know, like they're normal 18-year-olds, you know? And you're like, yeah, that's why I wanted you to go with them at the whole beginning. Right. And so, yeah, they come, they go to training, and then we do, you know, we put them in the barracks. They wake up, they get up for formation, they go to formation, they go to breakfast, they go to the entire morning of class, and they go to lunch formation. And then we grab them right after that. So they're going to see what it's like, you know, from there, then the afternoon classes and then practice again. So, you know, but they get a meal in the mess hall, all 4,400 at the same time. They're up at, you know, 6 o'clock, getting ready, getting dressed, getting downstairs by 6:15, all lined up, ready to go for the day. So it's just about showing them both, one, that our guys have, you know, breaking the idea of what they are, the perception, but then showing them the reality of what it is, which is a disciplined structure where you're expected to perform at your best. And then from that, you know, we then let them, you know, we're always asking how it was. And then we go to dinner where we bring a couple of our players and we sit separately from them so they can get any last questions out. And then the second night, we actually always let the player, that's it, after dinner. We let them go to the hotel, stay with the parents. And it gives them a good chance to debrief on what the day was for both of them, because the parents had their set of activities as well. And then the next morning we close out at breakfast. And at that point now, they've had a really good chance to have a conversation about it, instead of kind of wrapping it up and then trying to get on the phone, you know, 4 or 5 days later after it's not as fresh. So we have to be pretty strategic in it. But I think the biggest thing for us is showcasing that their perception of what this program is isn't really accurate. Here's what the reality is and why it can be for your son. And then also, you know, kind of just finding out what the parents' largest concerns are, and then, you know, educating them on those as well, and moving forward from there. But, you know, I think structurally overall, the actual itinerary isn't much different than it would be anywhere else.
Mark, what are your official visits? Do you do two nights? And I mean, are they a little different?
Typically, we try to do it in one night, but depending on where they're coming from, we'll do two nights sometimes. But it's basically, we'll fly them in the morning, and then they'll come over, they'll meet with the coaching staff. They'll go watch training, and then we actually will send them on an admissions tour of campus, because they do a great job of kind of talking about the ins and outs of like the university, not just the athletic side of things. Because we always want them to understand, like, yeah, you are here because of soccer. That's what brought this conversation together. But we need you to embrace the culture of DePaul and the university itself. And so the admissions people do a phenomenal job. I always joke around, like, if we can't get them on an admissions tour, I'm like, look, I went to school here and I've been here for a long time. This is going to be a very B+ tour. It's not going to be great. They do an amazing job, and they fill in some of the questions that a lot of parents will ask, whereas most of the time the kids just only really want to talk about soccer and whatever a soccer player does. But we know, like we were talking about, they're with us for 2 hours, and then they're off on campus, you know, going to different events and eating in the dining hall. So we try to bring them in the morning so that they get to meet with our coaching staff. We kind of set the standard for the day and get to know them a little bit. Then they'll watch a training session, they'll go on an admissions tour, and then we'll meet up for lunch after that. And so typically we'll bring one or two of our players with to lunch as well, so that the parents can chat with them and kind of get to experience what our players are like. And I think it's also important that they see the interaction between our players and our coaching staff, because we feel like that's one of our strengths, is our ability to connect with our players and for them to, you know, feel comfortable being around us, because I feel like our coaching staff is pretty relatable, pretty down to earth. We're human beings. And we kind of take it, like, when we're off the field, we, you know, we step into that role of like, we're here to support them. We're here to help them. We don't take the on-field stuff off of it. And our guys really have, I think, a good experience with us and find themselves being able to talk about anything with us. And I think that's one of our selling points as a program. When parents see like how great are the guys on our team are, and you know how great a relationship they have with us, I think it's a really important thing. And parents are essentially, you know, passing off their kids to you for the next 4 years. And so they want to make sure that they're giving them off to somebody who's going to look after their son, who's going to treat them as a human being, not just as a soccer player. And I think our staff does a really good job of making sure that we make that pretty well known. And then after that, we just send them off with the guys. They sometimes they'll go to a class if that's important to the recruit. If it's not, they'll just kind of go be a normal student, you know, for the evening. And they'll go out to dinner at one of the restaurants around here, which, you know, generally it's a pretty good spot and something that they don't have access to wherever they are. And then we'll meet back up with them in the morning and kind of go through everything before we let them go.
Yeah, I mean, you're also recruiting the family, and the parents are critical there. And yeah, I agree with everything you said there. We love having the lunch and bringing a couple of my guys in. And usually I try to keep it to maybe they're going to study the same thing, or there's some connection there just so that there's a, you know, easy conversation going on there. And it's such a critical thing when a parent leaves, like, okay, yeah, I can trust this guy with my kid, and his teammates seem to be wonderful boys. And so that's such a huge factor. And I think most places do a good job with that. But, you know, kids may not even realize when you get back in the car and you go home, what your parents thought about that is going to be critical. And you're going to talk about it on your 2-3 hour ride home or your flight or whatever. That will be brought up. And so, you know, all that's critical. And for the last thing here, I want to rewind a little but shift gears. So going back to preseason a little bit, Mark, you talked about the first thing you do is a fitness test, which I think is pretty common across the country. So if you don't mind, kind of give me your first 3 days. What does it look like start to finish? You know, just I'm coming to DePaul. I'm a true freshman. I know I got a fitness test. Do you tell them what it is? You know, what does that look like? What does the first 3 days look like? I'm on the Zoom call with you. This is what you can expect. You know, what can I get ready for?
Yeah, I mean, but the first day is the mandatory, all the meetings and everything, and we knock that stuff out of the way with, you know, compliance and every other department here, get their physicals done to make sure that they're cleared to play. And then, yeah, we do start off with a fitness test in the morning, and then generally the evening is some kind of competitive thing, whether it's 11v11 or a 7v7 thing, because these guys are all pent up and excited. Like, they don't want to be coached yet. Like, I remember those days. Like, all I want to do is kind of show what I have. And the best way to do that, I feel like, is put them in a competitive environment, just let them play, kind of get all the excited energy out. And then the next day we start with the foundation of kind of 1v1s, 2v2s in the morning, keep it small in the morning. And then the afternoon we'll open it up a little bit and play a little bit bigger so that the guys can then show a little bit of like, hey, this was something that we harped on in the morning and is important to us. Make sure that you're showing it in the afternoons. And then I believe on day 3 for us, we actually have a game. So just kind of throw them to the fire right away. Get everybody some time so that, you know, you get the nerves of putting on the jersey for the first time. Allowing kind of the freshmen to get some experience of playing in a college soccer game. And just letting them kind of see it from there. And then then you can start the process of like, okay, this is how we break down film. These are the important things to us, so that, you know, on our next preseason game, we have, you know, some goals in mind for us to then implement going into that game.
Do you play everybody in that first game, I'm assuming?
Yeah, we'll play everybody. We manage the minutes and everything. Like, I'm not here trying to grind guys into the ground. Like, our training sessions are about an hour and a half or so. For me, it's about making sure everybody's healthy so that we have, like, the full roster available for each game. Right. So yeah, we'll give the guys time in the first couple games, and then the last game we'll kind of treat it more like a regular season game and kind of dial that one down a little bit.
Yeah, we're actually playing a game on day 3 as well, and you know, being scrimmages, we can kind of manipulate what it looks like. And one of the scrimmages, we're going to do a 45, and we're going to treat it like a first half of a game with the sub rules, but then we're going to play 2 30s. And we've kind of, the coaches talked and like, we're playing specific guys in these minutes just so that they can get the full experience. And before I get to you, Brian, about the same question, can you guys give the details on eligibility for a freshman playing in preseason versus redshirting and then getting the spring? Kind of what does a redshirt season look like, and how do you guys, I do want to get back to Brian and your answer, but specifically to what you talked about, Mark, and playing in the preseason game as a freshman, will you play kids knowing that they might get redshirted, or how does that work? What's the NCAA rules on Division I?
Yeah, I mean, they'll all play in the preseason, and then after that, you know, you kind of look at guys like, he may have to redshirt, but like, we don't have those conversations before the season. It's because you never know. And so we'll have those conversations basically kind of like as the season goes on. If there's a player who, you know, in the beginning, you feel like every freshman can find a way onto the field, right? And so we want to make sure that like they feel that optimism too. And then as the season goes on, once we get about halfway through, if a kid hasn't played a bunch, like we may bring them in and be like, hey, this is our plan for you. You know, it's been, you know, we're halfway through the season. I don't necessarily see you getting on the field this fall, but let's just focus on developing, and we're going to redshirt you so that you understand it. But we don't tell any kid leading into the fall that they're going to redshirt unless they've been injured.
Sure.
So they can all play in preseason. They can all have kind of their fair shot. And then we decide from there. But we had a kid who we thought he was going to redshirt, and then we had four center midfielders get injured, and all of a sudden he was starting and playing 90 minutes for the rest of the season. Halfway through, I think he thought he was getting redshirted too. We hadn't talked about it yet. We just kind of kept pushing him in practice and coaching him like everybody else. And then all of a sudden, like one injury, two injury, three injuries. I was like, hey, one more guy goes down and what happens to you? And he's like, I'm playing. And I was like, right. So we got to make sure that, you know, you're still staying after it and doing all the right things, because your moment may come. And sure enough, it did. And he stepped up and played great.
And even if you do redshirt a kid, he can play full in the spring, and he can play in all the games, full 90s, and it doesn't affect his redshirt. At what point in the fall is there a percentage amount of games? I mean, what's the rule there where like, hey, you only played 5 minutes, but it was in game 15, so I'm sorry, your redshirt's burned. What's the game? What's the timing there?
If he plays any minutes in the fall.
At all.
We had a kid that played 1 minute when I was at Colgate, and it killed me after I became the head coach here, because I was like, oh, he'd be great to get as a fifth year to come over here. And they're like, no, he played in the fall. So it's
1 minute.
Yeah.
And it's different for injuries. It's the first, was it 33%, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If they get injured and they're out, then it's a different thing. But yeah, if it was a coach's choice that they played 1 minute and then didn't play the rest of the time, then yeah, they burn that year.
Perfect. No, that's all critical information. Brian, what are your first 3 days of preseason look like?
Yeah, this year will be different. I'm really thankful to our superintendent for backing the academic year up 1 week, because now I get a preseason. My first three seasons, I got 3 days. And then I actually get one. So I'm pretty shout out to, you know, General Gillen for that. So appreciate it. But now, yeah, it was fun. I got to actually plan a little bit. But our first 3 days. So we do two sessions on each day, but they're not really. The first session of each day is kind of like what we would almost call like intensity and habits. And then the second session of each day is kind of our organization. So, you know, the first day it's 1v1, 2v2, 7v7 in the morning. And then in the afternoon, it might be some on-ball patterns and set pieces. The second session then, you know, might be, you know, so a speed of play possession game into sevens again on this, and then our fourth session of that would then be, you know, kind of our pressing shape, you know, and then the third day again, speed of play type stuff, something in that space, and then maybe our block of eight in the mid block in the afternoon. So, you know, just varying. So we have a game on our fourth day this year. We have UConn as our first preseason game, and so. You know, that's, I think the way that our team's very young. We'll have, you know, 29 players on the roster, 23 of them will be underclassmen. And so I think that's going to be the way for us to get everybody on the same page as quickly as possible, is by, you know, using the afternoons as kind of our some might call it tactics. Honestly, I'm just calling it organization to try to get us all connected and thinking the same things at the same time. But something in that space. So, but yeah, kind of mentality and speed in the morning, and then structure and organization in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's a good idea to schedule such an easy game against UConn early for those freshmen. You know, easy.
Yeah. Yeah, we did it. Yeah, we certainly we threw it out there for them. We go away Temple, away Penn State, and away Air Force their first three games of their career. So it'll be a good start for us.
Well, you don't know who you are until you get punched in the face, and so you might as well get that out of the way as soon as you can. We're actually doing something different this year. We're playing day three, and we're playing William and Mary, Division I program that'll be 10 days in. We're only going to be 3 days in, and so it'll be. We're excited. I mean, it's going to be, I'm playing everybody. I've already told Coach Norris, you're going to see some freshmen out there, get ready for it. We're doing the three periods thing, and he's excited about it too. He's going to be able to see a lot of things that he might not have been able to see playing against somebody else. So, but we're going to know exactly who we are after that day, which I'm very, very excited about. And, well, that's great. I appreciate you guys. Scott, do you have anything else?
Four.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. It's funny. I thought you were going to say one thing you would advise older brothers to do. That was where my head went. I was like, go to his games when you can. But yeah, that's good. I think it's just watching his – and it's – I'm sure there's been more, but it's really just been a joy to watch him be the father he's become over the last 20 months. The level of like softness that he exhibits when he's with Zoe, the level of care, the videos we get where it's just him and her, like the amount of, love he's pouring into her is just awesome to see, and I think, that's really been the, probably the thing of late where it's like, you see this, your younger brother competing, pushing, driving through his career, becoming a great young coach, now becoming a great coach, period. Having being a strong husband to his wife and a great supporter of her and her endeavors and in her career. And then now just getting the chance to see him becoming the father that you knew he could be, and now he's leaning into it in an even better way is pretty rewarding and exciting to see. So I think, if anything, it's just I think I'd say taking away a level of softness and love that you can exhibit for others.
I've always just like admired Brian's one humility, because I always tell the story because Brian basically has won everything, like won youth national championship, college national championships, MLS draft pick, US Open Cup, like Big Ten player of the year, blah, blah, blah. And I always joke around, like my doorstop when I was in high school, like after Brian was in college when I was in high school, the thing that kept my door open was Brian's Big Ten Freshman of the Year trophy. Like his humility with all that stuff and like his desire just always put like everyone else first and kind of put all of his own individual stuff to the side has always been something that I've taken and continue to do, because he only ever wants people around him to be happy and like excited and doing well. He only cares about everybody else. He rarely does anything for himself. And I think it's a really admirable thing. We always kind of push him to like do some stuff for himself sometimes, but he only ever cares about like his wife's happiness and, how she's doing and, our mom and our family's happiness. And he's just a constant person of support. And he always shows me like, whatever you go through, like you can always be there for other people. Like it doesn't matter what you're going through on that given day. If somebody needs you, you just have to be there and you just got to do it.
Well, Scott, man, we're going to be getting emotional on this thing now. This is good follow-up.
Mark, he's annoyed with me. We were together, what, like 12 days straight? And I flaked on him for a round of golf, and he got pretty upset with me. So I had to buy his love back. So
I was excited for some brother time. We would have six hours of just hanging out, swinging a golf club, walking around a golf course in Chicago. And this guy was like, I don't want to deal with traffic. Okay.
There we go. Back to the brotherly love there.
Yeah, the emotions go quick, so.